This is Claire Midgley interviewing Daphne Todd for the Dialect and Heritage Project on the 5th of February 2022. Can I ask you to introduce yourself, please?
Well, my name is Daphne Todd, and I'm here primarily to talk about my favourite aunt, Aunt Ruth, who was, she never married, and she really did look after all her nephews and nieces.
And when and where were you born?
And I was actually born in York in 1942.
And where did you grow up?
And I grew up at the bottom of Cropton Bank. Cropton is a little village in North Yorkshire, and my parents were farmers, and we had a farm out of the village at the bottom of the big hill going up to Cropton. Impossible in winter, I might say, in those days.
And where do you live now?
And now I live more or less 5 or 6 miles away in a North Yorkshire village called Hutton Le Hoe, which is a moorland village right on the edge of the North York Moors.
And how long have you lived there for?
And I've lived there over 20 years, so it's like coming home again.
So your aunt, Ruth, was photographed with her Cleveland Bay horses in the Leeds archive. Which I've just printed some of those photographs of her out, looking lovely. Can you tell me a little bit about her? What was she like? What was previous jobs? How did she get into it? Can you tell me about her?
Well, I could never tell you enough about Aunt Ruth, because she was such an amazing person. She was very important to all our family, because there were four sisters who were brought up in Pickering. Their father was a solicitor. And the two eldest ones, being my mother, Joan, who was the eldest, and Ruth, both loved horses and were very close. And the two younger ones were not so involved. They were farming, but not so involved in the horse side. My mother actually bought her first Cleveland Bay, I think it was about 1938. Meanwhile, Ruth qualified as a barrister, which was quite unusual in those days, and she worked on the Northern Circuit. Now, what exactly made her decide to farm, I really don't know, except that she did have a great love of horses. My grandfather, whom I never knew, also had farming interests. So I imagine Ruth, this sort of influenced Ruth. And she and my mother were very interested in breeding animals. Mainly, they were mixed, very mixed farms, North York Moors type of farms, mixed cattle, pigs, sheep, hens, the lot. Mum's, I suppose, was about 400 acres at the top. Ruth's was a much more high-side farm up at Fryup, with much poorer land, actually bordering the moors. Ruth, I think, probably did more for the Cleveland Bays than Mum actually did, although Mum started first, and they egged each other on very much. They had pedigree Cleveland Bays, and they had pedigree Ayrshire cows, and there used to be great swaps between them. And I remember as a child spending hours in a modern cow house, modern in inverted commas. I think it's more or less all fallen down now, because the building was so bad at that time during the war or just after the war. But we spent as children hours in the pit, really, next to the cow house, because they built this cow house and it had all been subterranean, so that it was full of little fossils and shells. So while the sisters chatted and debated the cows, we looked for fossils. So I spent a lot of time in that cow house. How much I learned about cows, I don't know. But we would also ride up as children from Cropton through the Hartoft and over the moors to Fryup. So you can see how important she was, really, to us all as children. Do you want me to talk about the Cleveland Bays, what I think she did? perhaps a bit.
Yeah, if you want to share with me what...
I think the thing was, she met Jack Welford, I'm not sure exactly when, known as America Jack, because he lived in America House. And they obviously clicked and got on very well. And Jack's farm, America House, was very, very hillside and tough and extremely hard time to take over from his father, which again was either just the beginning of the war or in it. You know, sheep were fetching nothing. Sheep were fetching about 2 and 6 pence each. Extremely hard work. The government were telling you what to grow from memory and things. They used to come out and look and see what would be best to plant. And I remember my aunt, how she got into talking with Leeds University and exactly what the course was, I'm not sort of sure, but she always said, oh, they had a very good agricultural side or whatever interest. And they used to come out, Leeds University, various people, sometimes students, to Fryett, which must have been quite an education because it was pretty cold and not exactly comfortable. Reminds me a bit of Hardy's Highlands with turnips and frost and things. But she was such an interesting person. I think people enjoyed coming out. There's somebody called McGregor, and she had a lot of funny stories. And Jack became a great friend, and he was quite a person and quite a character. He would do a lot of judging of Cleveland Bays, and he was very much known for his wicked comments as he went down the line of people showing horses. I remember him telling my brother once, who had a yearling, this was a I don't know what class, but anyway, he was in a class Jack was judging, and he said, "Look, young lad," he said, "why?" He said, "I can see it's got ears, it's got corn coming out of its ears," meaning that it was absolutely out of its head and far too fat. Jack lived on a hillside farm, and he was a very good judge, but possibly, Ruth always said, because he could tell a good horse when it had lived on more or less nothing over the winter and was thin. The trouble with most of the Cleveland Bays, in their opinion, was the fact that they were far too well fed and fat. But anyhow, when they both were farming, at one stage, there were probably only about 30 Cleveland Bay mares in the country. That is a rough figure, but they really were vanishing. And I think Ruth's interest in the Cleveland Bays was because she felt they were worth preserving. And she always said, if you don't keep them going, they will disappear. And she felt that there was a place for these horses. She probably the most important point or thing that she did was to push to breed, to crossbreed them instead, as well as purebred. She said you could always get a Cleveland mare, you could cross it with a thoroughbred stallion, and you could produce a good hunting horse. Now, after the war, there'd been very bad trade, but it came back with the Pony Club starting, and people were hunting more, children were wanting ponies, and the Cleveland Bay became very useful in breeding the right sort of horse, a sensible horse, and also one which would carry quite a lot of weight. There was a lot of discussion about this because a lot of people obviously wanted to keep the breed pure, but I think she thought you could do both, but that's just my memories of things she said when I was not all that old. I mean, I was probably a teenager at that sort of stage and very much in the Pony Club. But she definitely was respected and did play a part in the Cleveland Bays.
I mean, she's photographed with a few different people and mentioned you know, within the archive with different people. So I'm guessing, like most things, it was like a bit of a kind of a grouping that they all supported each other in the area. I mean, it must have been very hard for us as a woman as well.
Yes.
Because there's, I couldn't find another reference to the Cleveland Bears in that area with another woman's name. It all did appear to be Ruth. That's not to say there wasn't, but, yes. You know, it must have been a bit of a community helping each other, really.
I think, yes, I think absolutely. I think Fryup and that Dales district, you helped each other, and that was how the farms worked. It was very poor, and people, I think they called it borrowed labour, where they all helped each other, and give and take, of course, a lot. And she was unusual in deciding to farm, but there was somebody else, I can't remember her name now. She was a bit further up near Captain Cook's monument, Rosebery Topping, somewhere up there, and she did Ayrshire cows. Now, I think, if I'm right, I don't think she ever married. Whether she was a friend of Ruth's from Cambridge, I don't know, but, I mean, Ruth had met various people when she went to Cambridge University, which was also quite unusual in those days for a woman to go there, as was to be a barrister. But not a lot of people. I mean, the one that comes to mind is Hannah Hawkswell. I mean, she also, and lived in quite a similar way in some ways to Ruth. You had no electric light in those days. We used to go and stay with her, and they had a generator, and you couldn't go to bed until all the lights were out, because the last light switched the generator off. So you can imagine this sort of nightly trek around the farm to find which one. But she loved nature. I can remember I had a truckle bed at the bottom of her bed when I used to go and stay. And, you know, she would point out, say, listen, Daphne, there's the nightingale. I always remember that. And she had love flowers. I mean, the garden was a bit of a mess. She didn't have time to do much. But she introduced me to this wonderful mountain glory, which was a climbing plant that climbed all over probably yew trees or box hedges or something. But I have these sort of little snapshots of going to stay with Aunt Ruth. Perhaps if I'd fallen out with my parents, I would get on my pony and ride over the moors and go and tell Aunt Ruth all about it. And she would send a telegram in those days to my mother saying, don't worry, Joan, Daphne's here, she's quite safe. And then I remember a fatal day when we went up there for lunch, I think, Mum and Dad and Anthony and I, and somebody came running down with a telegram. She never had a phone. I don't think she ever had one at Fryup. Maybe years later she did when she moved, but if she did, it was very late. Anyway, somebody came running down from the little group of houses a bit further up, saying, Mrs. Dummock, there's a telegram, urgent telegram for you. And it was that 7 cows had been struck by lightning, and the lightning had gone to a water trough, and it had just whapped 7 cows. And there were as we drove back down the Rosedale Road, we went home obviously immediately, there were 7 bodies just lined up. Hundreds of pounds. I mean, my mum, I think, sold the first cow at Russell Market for £100. So that was, I mean, that was exceptional price in those days. I remember I actually checked on what Ruth had said about the first Cleveland Bay my mum bought in 1938. This is horses, not cows. And she paid £40 for it. So we're talking a lot less money.
What was your mum's name?
Mum's name was Joan Dummock. Yeah. Dummock. Mm.
Oh, what a story. But Ruth, I mean, there's a lovely photograph, not in the archive, but that you've shown me of Ruth there with the in the Royal Mews. Do you know anything about about that, Daphne? Do you...
Well, all I know is the connection with the Royal Mews was very important because Cleveland-based, two of their uses were pulling carriages for the Queen, and so they would go into the Royal Mews for that. And Colonel, who was the Queen's equerry at that stage, would come up north to look at the Cleveland Bays, and he'd sometimes stay with my mother, and you know, they'd go up to Ruth, and then they'd go up to the real high side, to Jack One places, to look at horses, because there wasn't really anything in the south. There was a big shortage, and the Queen actually chose to promote the Cleveland Bays, I would say. And the other thing, of course, they were used for, Cleveland Bays, was the police force. They were used by the police as ridden horses because they were very sensible and could do the job, I suppose.
It's a lovely photograph there of her and...
It's beautiful.
It's her and Jack, isn't it?
I would think so. Oh, Sir John. Oh, America Jack left. Yes, yes. Well, America. He was such a good judge of horses. You know, he could see a good horse in a foal, which not a lot of people can. But he would go down to sales too, Newmarket sales with Ruth when they were looking for the horses and things like that.
It's just imagine getting that invite. I mean, just come down to the Royal Mews, and you know, there'd have been quite a big photographer there to take that photograph, assumingly. Yes, and it must have been an occasion.
It was very much an interest with Ruth. I mean, she really wasn't bothered. I think the thing about our childhood and growing up was that we crossed all strands of society, I suppose you can say. We were completely free as children, and you know, Ruth was not a person who was or my mother, they were neither people who were terrifically interest. They were, how can I put it? They had their interests, and that's what interested them. And they wouldn't really be bothered about getting a wonderful invitation. Ruth would just want to make quite sure that the Royal Mews was sent the best horse, and that it was promoting the Cleveland Bays. She wasn't the sort of person who would stick the invite on her mantelpiece. In fact, I mean, there's wonderful stories about the mouse nest in her desk, and she always had a pile of papers on her desk, a foot deep. And she said, oh dear, you know, I wonder where that got, you know, go through the paper.
Sounds like quite
but
a few
I never
fun.
Got to the Royal Mews, so I can't tell you, you know, much more. I was probably far too young to do that. But certainly to all the local shows, the Dales shows, Danby and Egton, Stokesley, all these shows. And of course, the markets. And because the cattle were pedigree, you had to go to pedigree markets. And I remember we used to go to, it was either Stockton or Stokesley, but there was one pedigree market you could sell your pedigree Ayrshires at there, and the other one for us was at Otley, I think, both in different directions. There were markets in those days at Pickering, but obviously as well as Malton, but they weren't pedigree. So you had these major trips with a Land Rover and trailer, which in those days practically took all day, and you'd come back at night and see sheep's eyes across the road where the sheep were sitting. And Ruth helped Mum a lot with milk. We had a milk round at one stage, and every now and then we didn't have enough milk to supply the villages that we served. And so you would do this trip at midnight after we'd finished milking, realised not quite enough milk, trip up to Fryup across very rough roads in those days over the moors, up to Fryup, and collect the milk to be sent out next day. So we had quite a lot of adventures. We had to work jolly hard as children. We were very privileged in the fact we had ponies. We rode a lot. The pony club was a terrific thing. And of course that went right across the whole horse world, I would think, because it got children interested and it became a huge interest, particularly if you lived in the country, right across the board from local farmers to lords and ladies. I mean, it was a wonderful thing to do, really. And it also, I think, taught children responsibility. I mean, we had to look after our ponies and groom them and brush them and exercise them and all the rest of it. But we had a very free childhood.
Did you have a favourite memory of going anywhere with your Aunt Ruth or your mum? Do you have like one that stands out?
Definitely. I mean, we had an annual trip with my aunt. We had all sorts of trips with her. Occasionally we were sent to the dentist with her, and the great joy was one day when the car broke down, which quite often did with Ruth. Of course, we never got to the dentist. But the wonderful trips were once a year going to Roundtrees. I think probably both Scarborough and York. Roundtrees was a big department store, and all the nephews and nieces were gathered up. And Ruth would take us all out for a Christmas lunch. And bearing in mind that the war years, sweets were rationed. You know, you did not see a lot of fancy food. To be taken to Roundtree's for lunch was quite something. You would get a Mickey Mouse meringue pudding. I can't remember. We must have had roast turkey for lunch or whatever they could produce, but all I remember was these wonderful Mickey Mouse meringue ice cream and puddings.
Did it have ears?
it had little black eyes. I can't remember about its ears, but I definitely remember it was delicious. And we were allowed to have seconds, and parents were not allowed to stop us, so we could, if we wanted more, we could have more. And then we would each be given £1, which was a huge amount of money, and we could go and spend it in the department store, in the toy department. And that was a Christmas treat every year for Ruth. But, I mean, she was incredible, helpful to the family, and I think she did a ski holiday once for us. I went with my cousins, and we went to France skiing. My brother turned yellow on the boat and never went out of Yorkshire again. It wasn't his cup of tea at all, but never mind, he tried it. And I think I sprained my ankle, but it was great, great fun. Even so, I think I had about 2 days doing skiing, and then that was it. I sat with my foot up, but it was very nice and quite a different country and quite exciting. But she was incredibly kind and very good at seeing who needed help and when. She actually took on quite an age, one of my cousins, who sadly had lost her parents, and she went to live with Ruth and went to school in Whitby. And I mean, this is a considerable achievement in my books for somebody who had never had children to actually look after this cousin. It was amazing, really. So she was quite an amazing person in my books.
And what was her role in the society? Because obviously she played a very active
role. Well, I think, I say the main point was she had a very good mind, probably because she was Cambridge educated. She had studied law, but I mean, I think that if you do law, you probably have quite a precise mind, and she could probably cut through and actually sort out. I can't say she was president of the society. She probably was. They all took it in turns. There were, you know, she did the most important thing was she was interested in the breeding of it and keeping it going. And she would always say that she didn't, she was not actually responsible for keeping the breed going, which people used to say, oh, if it hadn't been for Ruth, the breed would have disappeared. But she would never have that. She said, no, it was very much the times that it had been very, very poor. And then suddenly after the war, when things got going again, a natural progression made Cleveland Bays come into their own because they were used for breeding good solid horses, of which there was a huge shortage, and suddenly the prices shot up. But she had that academic mind. I mean, I think that's what she gave, and she was very, very interested in them, and that's what she gave to the people. And she had a great ability to gather up people. I say she had Leeds University out. She had agricultural studies on the farm, things like that. And she, with going to university, she knew people who would help the society there. And she had a lot of friends in the South, and so on.
Yeah, because that was the Cleveland Bay Society, wasn't it?
Yes, that was
that we were talking about.
Yes.
Oh. She's, do you have any favourite shows that you attended with her? Because obviously, did you help with kind of the grooming of the horses or anything like that with any of the shows? Or can you remember anything?
Not really with the horses. She had a wonderful man, George, who lived next in half Fryop Hall, really. I mean, Fryop Hall sounds terribly grand. It was a wonderful house and a wonderful situation, but it was anything but grand. But she had half, and George and his family had half. And in those days, we had shows for calves, for children would take their calves along, and you would spend hours making sure that your calf led well and didn't go bolshy on you. And Castleton Show had a calf show every year. And it basically used to be run by, I mean, Ruth often judged at these shows and things, but she encouraged. I remember George's children leading calves, and we led calves there. I think we practiced leading them at Aunt Ruth's and then took them along to the show. My brother sat down. He'd had enough. He was put bottom of the line, and that wasn't much fun, so he sat down and had a rest. He would be about five at the time. So I remember the calf leading sessions, not really Cleveland Bays and not really grooming Cleveland Bays. I was too busy grooming my own pony, to be quite honest. And anyway, Cleveland Bays can be quite frightening, especially when you're young. And I've never been very tall. Now, I'm much happier on top of a horse than I am on the bottom. And they have huge feet, which they will unwillingly, but I mean, not on intentionally, but heaven help you if they stand on your little toes because they're heavy.
And did you use like a local blacksmith then for your ponies and things like that as well?
Yes, we used latterly somebody called McNeil and originally somebody called Dowson from Kirby Moorside, who used to come and shoe the horses. And I can't remember who Ruth had, but we had a blacksmith who would visit the farm, would visit Beck House, and shoe the ponies and the horses. I mean, there was a wonderful story. My mother went to to get some dog meat, I think, one day from a friend in Pickering. And she came back with a stallion. Now, he was quite old, but he had won the Cesarevich, which is quite a big race. And he was a blood horse. So the blacksmiths would have to come up and shoe him. He was going to go to the knacker's yard, and in fact, she thought he was far too good, and he went on to breed quite a lot of good horses. I had a pony that I loved dearly, by Contreron, yeah.
What a lovely story, going for dog meat and coming home with a horse.
So life was we didn't have a huge amount of, well, you didn't have thousands of toys and things like that in those days. You had, everything was more or less homemade because you were fairly isolated. But you did have fun. You had certainly, you never knew what the next day was going to bring. Yes, I remember riding one day on the road between the farm and Lastingham, between Cropton and Lastingham, which was a little lane which you never saw any traffic on except your farm. And we had a resident herdswoman and various cowmen and people living in the farm. But I was riding this day on my farm, and this huge, great big American car pulled to a halt. I said, what on earth do you do? I can't do an American accent, but what on earth do you do here all day? He was absolutely incredulous. But it was so isolated, I suppose. No shops, you see, nothing. And America would be a bit further on than us, I guess, at the time.
You must remember that you must have had harsh winters, just like we have here. Do you have any... Have you ever had to dig any animals out or do anything like that?
Yes. I used to take my pony up and look for sheep. And I was very proud when I found one lamb. So it must have been quite a late winter. We'd probably have fairly early lambs, but quite a late winter. And bringing it, I've actually managed to find it and brought it back on the front of the pony. But every year, my husband and I got married in New Zealand, and we came back the winter. Can't remember, was it 67... Anyway, it was a bad winter, and my brother said happily to my husband, would you give us a hand just feeding the sheep? Yes, right, said Mike, who was used to working in a office. So off they set. I mean, it was incredibly snowy, and Mike had no idea. I've never seen... It was a really new experience for him, digging sheep out at the bottom of a hedge, halfway up a bank.
How did you carry a lamb home on your horse?
Well, you put
it in a bag?
On the withers. No, just put 2 feet over either side, front legs one side, back legs the other. And they sit. They're probably so terrified. But I did. No, I didn't have a bag because I didn't really think I'd find it. They'd lost a lamb up there. But I had a wonderful little pony who would, do anything. This was a small 13-2 pony, but she was a real cracker. She wouldn't go in a box. I remember coming back from Egton Show once, and the whole way back over the moors from Egton, Mum had the trailer. I think she went up in the trailer, but she wasn't on for coming back. She probably felt car sick. Anyway, we kept stopping and trying to put her in to save her the ride back, but she wouldn't do it. She was very stubborn, but she was very good. Brilliant, brilliant jumper.
Do you have a favourite pony of your own?
Yes, I think so. Yes, I always had a pony that was regarded as mine. They always were passed on or sold on. But when you outgrew them, I started with a wonderful Shetland pony that used to come into the house occasionally. It just wandered in front of the farm. It wasn't really fenced in anywhere. And when I was, I think, 4 or 5, I put the saddle on, didn't really realise you had girths, and the whole lot fell round and broke my arm, aged all of 5. But we had a Shetland pony and an Irish wolfhound, both about the same size. The Irish wolfhound would come in and clear the dinner plates occasionally, you know, when you were having a lunch party. He was just the right size to reach the dinner table. And if you weren't watching, your guests were in the other room. And the two meals disappeared.
And when you said you used to ride to Aunt Ruth's, how long did that used to take you then from kind of your house to...
Gosh, it's difficult to remember because it didn't seem anything... what would it be? I mean, it'd be 15 miles by car, but we would go sort of as the crow flies, probably be about as much as 10 miles. It would take a couple of hours, probably.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So...
yes. Quite a
distance.
Quite a ride. I might be wrong. It might have been one who I honestly can't remember.
I can imagine how your mum did get worried when you just took off to Aunt Ruth's.
Well, she liked to know if I had actually got... But they didn't. We were allowed out. That was the freedom you had all day long. And they were probably jolly glad that you were out of the way because they were busy working too. And we were lucky because there were other... families. There was about four families who had children, yes, four including me, who had girls my age. And so we would usually ride together. But occasionally I would go up to Ruth's on my own. But on an everyday basis, we would all meet each other with our ponies, on our ponies, and go off for a ride. Yeah.
Must have been quite a trek to school as well, and with you being quite isolated.
Yes, school was a difficult thing because there was no buses, so you couldn't go on a bus. We went to Kirby to school. It was a little private, what would you call her, teacher, who actually lived in Hutton the Hole, a Scottish lady. And we used to pick her up every day and drive to the doctor's house in Kirby Moorside. And the school was their top attic room with Miss Taylor. And there were, I suppose, about anything up to 10 of us, maybe not quite as many, all different ages. I mean, she was a wonderful teacher. But we had to be taken there and we had to be fetched, but it was done between the children who were going, so it worked quite well. We had the vicar's daughter from Lastingham, and we had next door farmer, and we would all join together and go like that. During the war, we had prisoners of war working on the farm at Beck House, and occasionally they took me to school. I can't remember... any others going, whether that was just can't remember, but I do remember going in an ex-army, a sort of army jeep thing, and some of the prisoners of war taking me to school. And I also remember swinging from the beams in the kitchen in a little swing up above all the men eating underneath. But that was when I was very, very small.
Must have also, with you kind of and Mike running the shop, you must have kind of seen a lot of change and a lot of characters around this area as well.
I think you, yes. I mean, the biggest change, I was thinking about this last night, and probably one of the biggest change is, obviously, is modern technology, because I did a course at Pitman's in London, and they had a public speaking competition. And I remember going from Pitman's to this. I can't think why on earth Pitman's would have a public speaking competition, but anyway, they did. And I had a friend, Scala, who was Jamaican, and we were delegated to go off to the something or other hotel in Russell Square, I think it was, somewhere around about there. To this competition. And my subject was television, the pros and cons of television. And that was terrifically controversial and the thing of the moment. Scala had the view from my bedroom window. I think she had to talk about it. You had to talk for 3 minutes. But that shows how much things have changed. I mean, there was no... We were running the shop when the currency changed to decimal. And that was another huge change. People change, yes, because the work's changed. It is much easier in some ways, I think, nowadays. Not as hard as it was, but it's hard in a different way because everything is so fast and expectations are so high, probably. But the villages have changed, obviously, because the farming element, the young people find it much harder to stay at home, even if they want to, because the prices are so high in the villages. So it has changed a lot.
So is there anything else, Daphne, that you wish, I don't know, you'd like to share with me, either about your Aunt Ruth or about you, or anything else that you think, oh, when I think of Aunt Ruth, when I think of, I'll edit this bit, when Claire started talking about Cleveland Bears and we found the photograph of Ruth, is there anything that you thought, oh, Aunt Ruth would do this, or Aunt Ruth would have loved that, or is there anything else you wish to share with me?
I would love to. I expect lots of generations like this. I would love to have Ruth back because she, when she retired from farming, she actually built a modern bungalow quite close to the farm. She never got it painted. I mean, it always remained the pink, that rather pinky pink undercoat that windows arrived in those days, and it never got any further than that. It's now a very smart cycling hub with the most wonderful views, and it's all been tidied up so much. Now, I would love to have her back and have her opinion, because this is another huge change. It wasn't sold as a farm. She kept a few acres there. And odd horse, but that has all totally gone. The farm has got holiday cottages on it. This is a thriving, as far as I can see, coffee shop, cyclist centre. It's called the Cycle Hub or something. And they have done it absolutely immaculately. It is just so different to the way life was. Now, why I'd like Aunt Ruth back is because I'd love to know what she would think. I think she's big enough to take it, you know, put the complete difference and say, well, it's a jolly good thing to get everybody out to the countryside on their bikes. On the other hand, would she say these damn cyclists blocking the road, you can't get past them or anywhere else? Be fun to revisit. But no, she was an amazingly generous person, both with her physical help and gifts and things, and her knowledge. And she was somebody you could always go to. And of course, if you had minor legal problems, I'm sure she helped the Dale out in general. Wartime wasn't easy. People were getting killed, and I guess a lot of people's marriages split up and broke. Yeah, people's marriages went, things like that. I mean, she was always there for advice, and that was what was important to her, what she believed in, which was her beloved Cleveland Bays, and interest, great interest. And she always said to my children, you've got to have an interest, doesn't matter what it is, as long as you've got an interest. So I have one son who's absolutely mad on football and can tell you anything about it, and the other one who is interested in music and things. So I hope that Serge is pleased with that.
So Ruth, obviously, she was born in this area, wasn't she? Well,
yes, yes, Pickering.
Pickering. Mm. And then obviously went to Cambridge. Mm. Then did the barrister work for a while in there London.
Yes. I think she was a land girl too, actually. Yeah. I've forgotten that bit.
And then I was going to say, when did she come back? Was she 20, 30?
I can't remember. I'm very hazy on dates. I mean, I could find out, but I'm not sure when. She looked for a farm. I can't really give you the exact dates on No.
It just must have been such a change.
I've exhausted you.
Yeah, it must have been just such a... go from being a barrister to then being, right, I need to go back to almost like my roots and not quite start again, but build that up. But that's not an easy task.
Definitely not if you were a woman. But there's nothing like a legal basic training for then going off, and you can apply that always in life, and you still can to this day, actually. If you've got that legal mind, you can then turn it to what you're actually interested in very often, or it can be a big help. Yeah. In a thing, but they had interests. That's what they had, and the interests. My grandmother died very young. I never knew her, and so my mother really took that sort of position over. I think she was still at school. Yes, I mean they went up to school in Scotland, so that was quite interesting. But I think they would be at school when my grandmother died. I think I have one letter from my grandfather telling them that he's just got a horse or something like that, you know. And so obviously he liked farming, although he was a solicitor. He was interested in farming, and so were the girls.
Have you picked up any words or phrases from different people or places?
Oh, that's bound to happen. I mean, you go through the things like mint and super. I'm thinking of the kids' ones that you get from children. Everything's super, everything's mint. There's a whole list of them, which I can't think of at the moment. Moggies. That's a cat, not a...
Have you inherited any words from relatives?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I've just grown up with them and used them. I suppose you could say I've inherited them. But I can't think what they are, but I'm sure they're in there somewhere.
Right. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to show you some cards and ask you some questions. So firstly, what do you call this creature?
That's a hedgehog.
What do you call these?
That's a dandy long legs.
And what about these?
That's an earwig.
And what do you call this type of garden wheel?
Goose Weed. Dog.
And this is a drop of?
Dew.
This is a bag of?
Sweeties.
What do you call one of these?
Bap.
What do you call these?
Rock bun. Oh, scone. Yes, scone.
And how many are there in the picture? Not one or two, but...
Three.
What's your word for these?
Spring onions.
What's this?
A happy couple.
What's he, what is she giving him? She's on his, he's on her back. Is there another word for that?
Oh, piggyback, yeah.
What do you call this?
Seesaw.
Complete this sentence by selecting the words you'd use in a conversation with friends. He asked me to fix it and... No way, do it yourself.
He asked me to fix it and I was like, no way, fix it yourself.
And complete this sentence by selecting the word you'd use in a conversation with friends. The food was...
Well, it depends how I was feeling. I would say, right, tasty.
Right, thank you. Right, now I have just a series of quick questions. What do you call a room in a house for storing food?
A larder.
If you haven't eaten any food for a long time, you're bound to feel...
hungry.
What words do you use for something to eat?
Food.
What do you call a coffee you might get from a cafe with lots of milk in it?
A milky coffee.
What's the dairy product that you spread on toast and sandwiches?
Butter.
Which words or phrases would you use to indicate a temporary break in a game when points cannot be scored?
Interval.
If you fall over in a playground, your knee might be...
grazed.
If you got covered in dirt at the playground, when you got home, you might need to get in the...
bath.
When children are very excited, you might say they are full of...
energy.
At the end of a long and tiring day, you'd say you were absolutely...
jiggered.
Which word would you use to mean not attending school?
Copping off.
Sometimes, when children are being very naughty, their parents tell them that someone will come and take them away. What do you call this mysterious person?
I don't know, bad man.
You grow crops and raise animals on a...
farm.
When you walk in the countryside after heavy rain, your shoes will get covered in...
dew.
When driving in icy or wet weather, you must take care because the roads are...
slippery.
Which word do you use as a term of endearment, even with strangers?
Duck.
Which word would you use to refer to someone as very attractive?
Very attractive. No blank. Really.
What is the word for spreading rumours?
Gossiping.
A picture not hanging straight is hanging...
crooked.
What do you call a very small piece of wood that has got into your finger?
A splinter.
What do you call a person who mends shoes and boots?
Cobbler.
Do you have any other words you'd like to tell us about?
Can't think of any. Gone blank.
Well, thank you, Daphne. That marks the end of our interview. It says thank you for your time.